We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 333rd edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 1,034th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of May 9th, 2024. I'm your host, Coach Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call, how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. So as we're waiting Jared to show up, I'm filling in for his banner moment. He wrote it. I'm going to ad lib a little bit. But we got a bracketology report from Joe Lenardi and ESPN, and Indiana was a 4 seed in that bracketology. Now, look, you know Andy Bottoms is the real genius when it comes to bracketology. We at Delphi Bracketology kind of know a little bit. And so we don't make a habit of really referring to Joe Lenardi a lot on this show. We go with Andy and the kids here at Delphi High School. Well, in the off season, you probably shouldn't go with any of us. But as we get into the off season, a program that didn't make the NCAA tournament wasn't much of a bubble discussion. It's nice to see that we are a 4 seed, and for us, that's our banner moment. So very encouraging to see Joe Lenardi as well as other national analysts having us in the top 20 discussion based on the success of the portal recruiting that has happened at Indiana. And also, if Indiana can meet those expectations in the NCAA tournament and get a top 4 seed, that is the most likely path to winning a national championship, most likely path to getting into the Final Four. And really, what we should be talking about is the most likely path to having a successful run in the postseason in March. So since the tournament began, seeding in 1979, all but 4 of the 45 champions have been top 4 seeds. So again, that's, you take it with a grain of salt from all of us bracketologists. It's basically what people think of the roster, and the actual bracketing happens when the games are won or lost, and your record speaks for itself. But I think it does speak well that Indiana's roster is in position to do what Mike Woodson wants it to do, and that is win basketball games and challenge for Big Ten championships and go far in the tournament. You could break it down, look at the number of seeds. There have been 15 occurrences of a 4 seed making the Final Four. 79% of all Final Four participants have come from seeds 1 through 4. So, you know, if we're looking for Indiana to do more than just bounce back and make a tournament, getting into that top 4 protected seed can be a path. It's not a guarantee to good postseason run, and that's what we're wanting. So bracket projections, as I said earlier in May, are are worthless, to be honest with you, as a bracketologist. You shouldn't listen to us until about mid-December, January, and then maybe even February as the games count. But again, it does speak of where Indiana has been successful in the recruiting, in the portal with NIL, and I think that's an encouraging sign coming after last season's results. Okay, now let me introduce co-host Jared. We'll be here shortly, but right now, he is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated and an unemployed shot doctor, a USC football fan who is shaking his Skechers at the news that five-star quarterback Julian Lewis, who initially committed to Southern Cal, has smartly scheduled an official visit to Indiana later this month. Ladies and gentlemen,
analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
Ryan, what do you want to rant about today? Coach Cignetti's recruiting prowess, or is there something else on your mind tonight?
Very happy for Coach Cignetti to get the top quarterback in the country on campus. I wouldn't get your hopes up. I think that's going to come down to a Georgia-USC battle in the end, but we'll see. He certainly likes the coaching staff. That kid does. So, and they were like the first to recruit him, I think, and that's where the loyalty lies. I was going to talk about Dylan Cease's dominance so far this year, but Jared's not here and I can't rub it in on the White Sox fan. But you know, yesterday he went 7 innings, 1 hit, shutout ball at Wrigley Field, striking out 12. Guy's got a 2.19 ERA. I'm loving it. But I guess I'll mention I'm excited. I'm going to be in Bloomington next Friday. I'm going to be in Indy for to visit some friends, and I'm going to go down Friday afternoon, grab lunch, and walk around ye old campus with a buddy I grew up with. I think that'll be fun. I'll let you guys know if I catch wind of any portal commitments, but this is kind of the slow time of the offseason right now. It kind of hit a wall. We were kind of chugging right along with a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, and this week came along and just slammed that door shut. And I'm sure some of it has to do with students off campus, a lot quieter around the school right now. There's probably another portal edition coming pretty soon, but we're not guaranteed that. And I don't know what they're going to do. I think they have two open spots right now, Coach, right? It's not one.
Yes.
It's two. Yeah. So, and the other
11.
The other we'll see. I would love to see at least one of the last two spots filled by somebody with some time left instead of a final year guy, because, you know, theoretically, that means you have, theoretically, because guys can leave whenever now, but theoretically, you have some time to develop guys. And you also, it's a guy you don't have to replace again, theoretically, next year. I'm going to say theoretically as many times as I can in this podcast. That's my new goal.
And we're going to talk about that very thing in segment two, about how to readjust thoughts about those very things.
Recalibrate everything every offseason. And look, I think that this is going to be the status quo for a while. I do think coaches are getting tired of it. I really do. The more people I talk to around college basketball and football, frankly, they're just exhausted by it. And they just say, this is not a sustainable system. It's not. And they say, the NIL, we're fine with that. They'd love to put some guardrails on it. There are none right now, really. I mean, no real, for any practical purpose. I mean, right now, you could technically tell kids to get off scholarship to add new kids and just pay them the amount of the scholarship. And so you could have 100 players essentially on scholarship without technically being on scholarship. And I think that when things start heading into the subverting the rules intended for fair play, area of things, I think that's when you're going to start crossing lines and they're going to have to come up with some kind of system that everybody agrees to. And right now, I think the administrators and coaches who have kind of been on the side of let them do what they want for a long period of time are now starting to come back to, we're never going back to the way it was, but I think they want some guardrails on transfers and things like that. And I think the next thing that will be introduced are multi-year contracts. And if all schools agree to do multi-year contracts only through their collectives, then that will have to be what they do, unless the players decide to go pro. I think that would be the out. But I think that's probably the next thing on the horizon. And then from there, you start to restabilize back towards, you know, move it back towards a little bit of stability. But we don't know what it's going to be or how long that's going to take. I just know that college coaches are so frustrated right now because they'll work their tail off, get a guy in the portal. In football, this is happening. They'll get a guy in the portal in December. And then after spring practice, the guy doesn't love everything about it, or he shows out in spring practice. And suddenly there are other opportunities. He's like, nah, never mind. I was here for 3 months and now I'm gone. And now they have to restart recruiting all over again. So we'll see what happens with this. This is life for now. We have to accept it for what it is. But I do think changes are going to be coming on the horizon somewhere. I don't know what form it will take, but there will be changes.
We'll talk a lot about that here in segment two. So are you in the afternoon on Friday or the evening Friday? Because I'll be in Bloomington on Friday night because I'm going to the PGA in Louisville. We'll be back in at night.
I'm going to a concert Friday night at 7. So I'm going to come down in the morning, have lunch, and then see some people and skedaddle up to Indy. Race back. It's going to be a quick turnaround.
I'll miss you. I'll wave on the highway.
I'll wave on the highway.
Exactly. But enjoy your time in Bloomington. But here's what we have in store this week. Segment one, we'll go over some Hoosier headlines and talk about that. Segment two, we're going to talk about how to be a fan in the portal. As Ryan was talking about, it's the wild, wild west right now. And how do you evaluate your team? How do you rank teams? You know, on our show, I posed the question today to all of us. How are we going to do our preseason Big Ten? Because everyone's in love with their team because the new guys are coming in everywhere. It's an interesting time. And do we have to re-evaluate a few things? We'll talk about that in segment two. And I tell you what, we have some really outstanding questions in segment three. If I can figure out, I think I uploaded a video to answer an answer to one of the questions. But you guys have come through again, I think, with some absolute awesome, awesome questions in segment three. So all of that is coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. Now let's talk about our presenting sponsor. Home Field Apparel, well on for the team. This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere. And it's not just IU. Homefield has unique, interesting designs printed on the softest, most comfortable fabrics for over 150 college universities. They just recently released some little five bomber jackets, Indianapolis 500. The month of May is here. Get your gear from Homefield. Indianapolis 500 stuff is fantastic. And the racing fans that I've seen and talked to, they just absolutely love what is available through Homefield, so get your credit cards ready. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable, the colors will last through many washings, and you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business, so what could be better than that? I've kind of been on a hiatus a little bit, and I had
enforced by the wife.
Yeah, and then I got that two t-shirt mailer thing, you know, the grab bag type thing, and I kind of got a shirt that I really didn't want from a place close to me. So maybe that's my painting shirt.
You know what I'm going to say, Coach? We happen to know a guy who might be able to exchange that for you if you make a call.
Exactly. but anyway, go to homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code HOME23 for 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME23 for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. Okay, Hoosier headlines. Indiana picked up a crystal ball for Langdon Hatton. Travis Branham of 247 nailed crystal balls for Carlisle, Rice, and Ballo. Hatton is from Indiana, Georgetown, Indiana. Started at William & Mary, then transferred to Bellarmine. He's 6'10", has one season of eligibility remaining. 10.5 point average, 7.1 rebounds, 33.3% from three, but is known as a good shooter. Campus visit coming up soon. So that's one of the big highlights as the portal continues. Rankings, IU transfer portal class is somewhere in the top five, depending on where you look. That could go up or down depending on what's happening. No one's really going to enter the portal now. I think the deadline has passed to leave a school, but people are still adding to their rosters. Bryson Tucker finished as a top 30 recruit from all services. The highest ranking was 12 from On3, and his low ranking was 28. So there's the traditional recruit coming in, top 30 player coming in. And then there was a good debate on Ware versus Edey on Ringer NBA Draft Podcast between Kevin O'Connor and John Fanta. Fanta picked Ware over Edey and was trying to convince O'Connor to change his mind. That's an interesting debate. The skill set to me goes to Ware. More potential is a quick. I haven't listened to that podcast, but that's where I would go with that. And then we could talk about the NBA playoffs. Cleveland here just had a pretty dominating performance against the Celtics. Where do you want to go, Ryan? What would you like to talk about?
Well, I think the potential new addition of Langdon Hatton is the biggest news. And you need – the front court is thin. It's very, very thin behind Ballo and Renew, and you're going to need a guy. And you probably need somebody who's multi-skilled. He's 6'10". He's got some size to him as well, some bulk. So that would help around the post. I mean, you would hope you get like a straight rim protector who can just come in and play defense. But if you're getting a 6'10 guy with a little bit of extra skill, 7.1 rebounds per game, he could shoot it a little. You got to feel okay about that this late in the portal, getting that guy. He does only have one season left, which again, not ideal for what Indiana needs because Ballo's going to be gone. Renew, you got to be thinking if Indiana has a good season, a lot of it's going to have to do with how much Malik Renew has developed. And if he develops enough, he might test the waters of the NBA. So you'd like to have some depth there. They may have to find that in recruiting, high school recruiting. But yeah, I think he's a really nice player. I've watched him play. He fits in as a backup in the Big Ten, especially if he's willing to come to Indiana. He knows what he's getting into. He's not looking for a starting role because he's not going to get it here. So again, solid player who's done it at the D1 level and seems to fit the backup role in the post that Indiana is looking for. We'll see. And we'll see if there's anything else on the horizon there. They've had a couple other guys. You know, they've talked to a couple other guys. I think they've had one or two other guys on campus who are more wings and guards. And we'll see if anything pops there.
One of the things, and I have been kind of off the radar for some family health issues, taking care of my mom and some other things. But so I haven't heard your podcast of what you've talked about, but I've been excited about guards. I agree. We need a backup, four and five for that rotation, but really, really happy that Coach Woodson has gone after perimeters and guards. And I think that speaks volumes to maybe where he's going to try to go offensively. But you do need someone to back up Ballo and be in that rotation like Walker was. And you had Sparks. Those two guys graduated. You have not replaced them. You replaced Ware with Ballo. So Hatton seems like a guy. And if he can stretch the floor a little bit too in a substitute role, that is exciting to me. I know it's only 33.3%, but again, just being the threat of a pick and pop type action, that gives some flexibility to the coaching staff to add something. Ballo is almost a straight post up guy. Then you can bring this guy in for minutes and run some different things that gives some flexibility offensively. So that is exciting to see as well. And we are now welcoming now the host, as I'm going to take a back seat after getting started. Jared Morris is with us. Jared, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great. Feeling great. Teddy's finally sleeping. Excited that you're back on the show, Coach. So excited to
good
be
to
here.
Be back. Good
and
to be back.
And talk some Hoosier Hoops.
Very good. Well, we were talking.
Hang on. I got to grab something real quick, Coach. So keep doing what you're doing. I'll be right back.
All right. I really liked the guards. And Ryan, you brought up a very interesting point. The reason I liked Rice and Carlisle, because in the old way of looking at things, they got years of eligibility left. And so I thought that was, you got the guards that you wanted, and then they have years of coming back. And that still can happen. But with this wild, wild west, as we'll talk about, I'm not sure you really should consider that. Just look at the roster as it is this year going forward and hoping that it achieves its maximum. Jared, we were talking about Langdon Hatton, and Indiana has gotten a lot of guards. They're nine deep on the perimeter, depending on, you know, where you place everyone. And I know Mbako can play some four, but they can have three waves, basically, of players who have played. And that makes me happy because it's a guards game. But you do need reserves for the big guys. Your thoughts on Langdon Hatton, and have you heard anything else that you want to share?
Only that, you know, I know they're trying to get him on campus. There hasn't been an official visit yet. But I think you mentioned this, you know, Indiana got a crystal ball from Travis Branham, who's been pretty much on point. I mean, the one thing that Indiana still needs is backup post defense. You know, I know we were looking at Alex Hemingway, and you can say Indiana could use another shooter. I mean, you can always use more shooting, but you've also got a guy like Anthony Leal, who has proven he can step up and knock down a shot, not at the level of a Hemingway, but can also play some defense. So I'm not as worried about that. But, you know, right now you really only have Umar Ballo as a post defender. I mean, Malik Renew can do some things down there, but we know he has his struggles. So you just have to have someone for the matchups where you need it that can step in and play some post defense. You know, all you have to do is think back to the game a couple years ago against Purdue when Trayce Jackson-Davis picked up those early fouls and Michael Durr came in and played really good defense, was kind of the unsung hero of that Rob Phinisee game. And so every now and then you need that guy. And if Langdon can bring, or Hatton, if he can bring, you know, a little bit of shooting and having him out there, you're still, you know, kind of spacing the floor and it's not, hey, we just have to dump it down to this guy on the post, even better. But my biggest question about him is, you know, can he guard down there? Because I think that's what he'll primarily be used for.
Does he have to guard? I mean, if he's getting, what, 10 minutes, 12 minutes in replace of Ballo or whatever, I agree with you. It'd be nice for him to guard.
I don't even know if he'll get that
away if he's.
I mean, I don't even know if he'll get that many minutes on a game in, game out basis, because I think, you know, obviously Ballo's going to play 23 to 27, something like that, you know, based on kind of what he's done before. I think they'll probably try and stagger he and Renew, you know, and play, you know, when Ballo's out, then let Renew play some at the five. And there may be games where that's all they have to do. But, you know, you're always one injury away, and Renew has foul trouble, obviously. So you've got to at least have somebody that you can count on down there to step in.
And it's a body.
Be every night, but especially in the Big Ten, there's going to be three, four. You know, Peyton Sparks had to start a game at Wisconsin last year.
And I forgot he did about well that.
Yeah, I mean, he did well for Peyton Sparks, but, you know, Peyton was just limited in some of the things that he could do. So I think if you have a guy like Hatton who brings a little bit of a different flavor offensively, you know, that's good, because obviously then Indiana won't be pigeonholed into, you know, running, you know, basically dumping it down into the post all the time when you have your backup big in there.
Do you guys think that we'll see more of Mbako and guys like that at the four this year with how the recruiting has gone? And again, I apologize, I haven't really tuned in the last couple of weeks to see how you guys handled all of the portal things, but it just seems to me like if we are going to use Renew as a five with Ballo, that means then Mbako, you know, if Tucker can play there, whoever you think can play at that four, going a little bit small, as Woodson dabbled in that a little bit last year. So do you think that's maybe what we can read into the tea leaves by what they've recruited or not?
Gonna have to. Yeah, I mean, they've almost kind of pigeonholed themselves into having to do it at times with this roster. Now, I think Ballo and Renew will start, and I think you'll see, you know, 15 to 25 minutes a game with them playing together, just depending on the game. So then what do you do for the other 15 to 20 minutes? Well, you either have one of them out there, or if you're, you know, going to do a bench unit with Hatton as your center, well, you know, now you don't, you know, if Goody's playing the four, I mean, you don't have kind of another guy who's there. You know, like Anthony Walker played that position last year, but he wasn't really a threat from the outside. And so as you kind of start to do the different permutations of the lineups, there's just a whole lot more that has, you know, kind of one big at the five, and then you're playing,
right,
you know, someone at the four who can step out and stretch the floor. And before, it wasn't like that. But, you know, now just the way this roster is, it's nice to be here in Maine. It's like, we could use a guy to play post defense, because that hasn't been an issue. You know, if we were going to have an issue with two scholarships left, that's the one that I would want to have. So we'll put it that way.
What's our feelings on Tucker? It seems like once we got, you know, Rice and Carlisle and Goody, that Tucker kind of, people may not you know, here's a McDonald's All-American coming in. I know he might take some time, just like Mbako, but I think he's going to play quite a bit. I haven't put all the permutations yet through on who starts and minutes and all of that, because that's going to be very interesting to do. But as we said today, the rankings came out, and he's a top 30 recruit. I think he has to get some major run. And it seemed like once the recruiting was coming through, like he was the last guy mentioned. You guys' thoughts on Bryson Tucker?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jared. Ryan, you can go first if you want to.
Okay. I think that he's there's a lot of to like there, but to me right now he looks like an energy bench guy. Like I don't think there's any chance he starts. Maybe when you first recruited him, you thought maybe you could put him at the two, but he's really plays like a three. Right. And I think there's some times on the second unit you could have him handling the ball out front, trying to take guys one-on-one and things like that. But I think that he's definitely a bench guy right now. And I'm sure he knows that, or he probably would have entered the transfer portal after these guys were at it. He knows what he's in for. I do think he's a multi-year guy. I can't see him. He has the athleticism for the NBA. He has some of the length they like, but he doesn't shoot well enough to play two guard, which is where he's going to need to play in the NBA, or learn to handle the ball well enough to be a point guard. He's not there yet. So I think that's what you're going to see with him. And I think he and a guy like Trey Galloway, maybe off the bench being interchangeable as the guys who have the ball in their hand the most off the bench, that fits. You know, you could throw Gabe Cups in there too. Maybe those are the three perimeter guys together off the bench, but I'm interested to see how he fits and what they do with him, because he's a wing guy, but he's not a standing shooter. He's not a catch and shoot guy. He's at least not right now. Who knows what he looks like after this summer, but as of now, that's not what he does. He's a driver. He likes to pull up from long twos. He likes to finish in the rim. He likes to get out on perimeter. The thing I like about him that I think is useful off the bench right now is, and because the other things I just described are what the first unit guys do. So what are you getting when you get the second unit? Maybe it's just a replication of what Rice and Carlisle do. But the thing that he does that I really like is he gets out in transition and he finishes. Indiana doesn't do that really well under Mike Woodson. So it'll be interesting, again, when you have a deeper bench, which they have with all the money they've spent to bring these guys in, you've moved several guys who play a lot down to the bench spot with Cups, with Galloway, with now Tucker, who would have been a guy who, you know, would play a lot normally if you didn't get the other guys. You've moved them to the second unit, theoretically. I'm saying, by the way, Jared, I've decided I'm going to say theoretically as many times as possible tonight. So, yeah. So
it's May 9th. It's all theoretical right now.
Theoretically, you get those guys on the bench and they all have a lot of energy. Get them out in transition and run. Be fast with them because they've all got some speed. So I think that's his role, has to be somebody that's an energy guy off the bench. And the other thing he does is I think he plays defense. I think he's got long arms. I think he's got good instincts. And he's got good athleticism. You could teach that guy to play defense.
Yeah, he's a curiosity to me right now, in a good way, because I think he can bring a lot of things to the table. He has all the requisite athletic ability that you would want. But we're going to have to see how some of those offensive skills translate right off the bat, especially the shooting. I think he'll score as a cutter. Hopefully he's a guy that they send to the glass for offensive rebounds, getting out in transition. I think he's going to have a lot of value there on second units, especially when he gets to play against other teams' backups, because just by virtue, I think, of his athleticism and size, he'll find opportunities. And then we'll just have to see. I mean, if you told me that, you know, he's going to have an OG Anunoby like impact from the 2016 team, where he really comes on at the end as a defense. You know, he's not, I'm not comparing them, but just he starts out slow and then comes on as a real impact player late in the season. That wouldn't shock me at all. And if you told me he's a guy that really kind of struggles to find his footing, but you see some flashes, you know, that wouldn't surprise me either. It's just, it's hard to know, you know, exactly what we're going to get from him, but you know, when you have a guy who, you know, his lowest recruiting ranking was 28th, it's very clear there's a lot of talent there to work with. And so I'm very curious. I'm very excited to see. I just think it's really hard to project him, especially on a roster now that has so many other, not sure things, but demonstrated things. You know, it's like, hey, we've seen Rice play for a year. We've seen Carlisle for a year. We've seen Mbako for a year. We've seen Malik for two. You know, we've seen Goody for three. we've seen Galloway for four, and that's your top seven. So, I mean, having that, you know, it feels like it's been a while that we haven't had to count on a guy like Bryson Tucker, but we really don't right now. You know, his production is going to be kind of a nice to have, a bonus almost. And that's a great spot to be in, you know, with your four-star, five-star freshman. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, that's going to be, it's one of the things I'm most interested in seeing, you know, when the games actually start. Real quick, before we move on, I do just want to highlight, I thought the NBA Draft podcast on The Ringer, their most recent episode with Kevin O'Connor, John Fanta was on there. They had a really good discussion about Khalil Ware and Zach Edey and who they would take first. And props to John Fanta for talking Kevin O'Connor in to Khalil Ware being the better choice over Zach Edey. I think both guys are first-round picks. I think they'll both have their place in the NBA, but I certainly think Khalil is a better prospect. But I would check that out. I thought it was a good conversation.
And for that discussion, I think it really depends what you're looking for. Yes. Are you looking for high upside? Are you looking for somebody you can develop into a long-term starter? Or are you a playoff team that needs a bench body? If you're a playoff
someone
team...
Someone who can just come give you 10, 12 points in a regular season game, Edie's going to be that's
Edie. Yeah, because the variance with Khalil is going to be really wide depending on what happens with his body, what happens with his handle, what happens with his jump shot. So Edie's going to be... he's the kind of guy who's going to get there, and I don't think he's going to get any better. I think he's going to be what he is, and... be that guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. He was a great college player, but I don't see any room to expand his game. He's not going to be shooting threes regularly, you know? So.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on here. Coming up on the assembly call, we're going to address a question that has been on a lot of fans' minds over the last couple of years. How should we be approaching our fandom with so much upheaval in college sports? Coach, you wrote us a really good email about that earlier today. We'll recap that, talk about it. Stick with us on the Assembly Call.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, this is Deron Davis. And what's the only thing better than dominating a Duke big man in the post? It's celebrated with friends afterwards. Join Gerard, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the Assembly Hall call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, Deron. Welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with
the
Ryan
Assembly
Phillips,
Hall call.
Here,
Assembly
here Hall with the call. Coach Brian Tonsoni. Yes. What we need is for Deron to join the TBT team for Indiana, the Assembly Ball team. And it can be the Assembly Hall call ball. is what he would call it, maybe. Something like that. Anyway, all right. So as we were kicking some ideas back and forth today over email about what we wanted to talk about, Coach, you brought up a really interesting topic. And I'm just going to read your email because I think it explains some things that I think a lot of people have been thinking and feeling. So we're going to use this as a jumping off point for this discussion. So Coach's question was, how to be a fan in the portal era? Without judgment on talent, fit, or style, or about criticizing the portal or NIL, I used to feel connected to players more, especially as they came in as freshmen and stayed 3 or 4 years. Now with the ability to transfer multiple times, I find myself more connected to the jersey. In other words, I will be excited once I see the helmets, the candy stripes, and it is Indiana playing, and I also feel that way about other programs. There is less movement in the professional ranks. I will see Caleb Williams at QB for at least 4 years until his rookie contract is up. I feel good about Miles Rice and Cannon Carlisle having 3 years of eligibility left, but is that even something to consider anymore? Thankful for the portal because Indiana with its NIL can rebuild quicker, but how do I engage with one-year rosters instead of programs? Maybe this is just an old man issue. We all love new players. Every program probably believes its portal additions are going to elevate their program, but how do we even rank Big Ten teams going into next season? Illinois was a 9 seed 2 years ago and had the Meyer kid from Baylor. He was a top-rated player, but that team never meshed. What were the ratings of Lance Jones at Purdue, Marcus Dumask at Illinois, or even Cam Spencer at UConn, all who were better fits than anybody thought? West Virginia had 2 years of top-5 rated transfer rosters and didn't make the tournament. Even from a bracketology viewpoint, I have no clue who is where, what it all means. The Wild Wild West is here. How do we set reasonable expectations? So, Coach, I want to give you the chance first just to follow up with any thoughts, but I think there are a lot of our listeners that are wrestling with this, where it's, hey, we're all really happy that, you know, Indiana can bounce back from a poor season last year by rebuilding a roster. And I think, I mean, everybody who follows Indiana basketball would say that as we sit here on May 9th, we feel way better about things for next season than we did on February 9th or March 9th or even April 9th, you know, because of how quick they were able to do it. But yet, you know, kind of deeper down, what does that mean for fans and the way that we approach this upcoming season? So what are the thoughts that you have? What else have you thought about that since you sent
the email? Yeah, I've done a lot of thinking since the end of the season on you know, how do you build these one-year rosters? Because with the transfer portal on NIL, it's basically one-year rosters. And how can we as podcasters or fans even evaluate good year, bad year type of thing? Because it's so different. Because you could have a rebuilding year and be headed in the right direction and look at that a little different. Now it's win and win and win and win. There's really no excuse not to win every year. So there's just a lot of mental gymnastics that I've been doing on how to be fair in evaluating year to year. And, you know, every year you're going to have young players or you're going to have players that haven't played together. So those excuses have to change. But I did that thinking, and then how do I have to change? I like seeing 3 years of eligibility for Rice and Carlisle. When I read that, I was really excited, and then it hit me. Well, if they're not happy next year, they can leave. You know, and I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but and then I started thinking, man, I like Galloway and Leo. Well, they've been there 3 or 4 years. How many more times am I going to see those types of players? Even though I think the formula for winning college basketball is a combination of those kind of players and you fit the portal around your 3 or 4 year players. But what's that mean for AAU and high school recruiting? Is it only going to be a top 30? So I just had a lot of these questions that college basketball is so different. How do I look at it and how do I be a fan? How do I make sure that I'm positive, as positive as it can be? And baseball has transfers all the time. I just don't know who they are because, you know, it's not that popular sport. But when Indiana runs out on that diamond, I'm cheering for Indiana. So I'm trying to get in the frame of mind that I still love Indiana. I just don't know a lot about these players and are not as connected and not as excited about the whole program. And I want to make sure I get in the right frame of mind to be liking one-year rosters and not worrying about it being a program. And in some ways, I find that sad. But I think it's healthy to make sure as a fan you look at things. So all of these questions, I haven't really have an answer for any of those. But, man, when watching not just Indiana, but Kadari Richmond leaving Seton Hall and going in the same conference, you know, to St. John's, and, man, it's just it's how do you just, I mean, again, the question was, how do you fan and what's the appropriate way to accept all this change that's happened so quick?
So I would say, Ryan, there are two things here that I've been thinking of. One is, it's good to be near the top of the food chain when it comes to NIL, because I think, you know, a guy like Malik Renew, right? We invested 2 years in watching him and breaking down every moment of every game, and it would have really stunk to see him go somewhere and play somewhere else. But fortunately, we had both ends of the equation that he wanted, right? Which is competitive NIL and a good situation for his game to develop. Now, you know, that might, you know, that second part may not always be the case, depending on the player and their fit. But as long as Indiana basketball is Indiana basketball, that first part is probably going to be there. Maybe we won't always have the massive NIL resources we've had for this offseason, but we'll be able to compete relatively well, at a minimum at a top 20, top 25 level, sometimes at a top 10 level. So I think the way that we look at it is probably a little bit different than how we might suggest a mid-major team look at it, where, you know, if you have a good player, that guy's leaving. I think at IU,
the mid-majors have become the minor leagues.
Yes. And that's a whole other show how that might develop. Yeah. You know, I think the second part of it is, and so I think my point is that first part is going to mitigate some of the issues. You know, we got to have Trace Jackson Davis here for 4 years, and I think, you know, there can be other players like that, you know, who come, who aren't quite ready for the NBA, but because Indiana can pay, you know, good NIL and it's a good place to showcase your game, and if you're a good fit with the coach, you know, those players may stay. So I still think we'll get some of that. What I think is going to be different is just, and this is what you alluded to, is just the way that we relate to the teams and the players. You know, we're all Indiana fans, and when we see those uniforms, we're going to cheer for them and all that stuff. But to me, the difference with college sports as opposed to pro sports, and why I've always connected more with college sports and just been more viscerally into them, is there was always something more relatable about the players. And it's not that players making money changes that, per se. But I think what is going to be a little bit different, I think, for some fans, is there was something about, hey, you know, these guys are coming in as freshmen and sophomores and juniors, and they're going to the same classes and, you know, staying in similar dorms, and, you know, they're struggling to have pizza money on a Friday night just like I am. They just happen to be basketball players too. And so I think the professionalization of it is going to change that relationship a little bit, but I don't know exactly how it's going to change it.
It's funny, the game has gotten a lot dirtier, yet it feels less dirty in some ways because you're not exploiting them.
At least it's all above the table. Yeah. And I'm really happy that the players are getting paid. So this may be something that maybe it doesn't create as much of an issue as I fear that it might. But I just think coaches, it's just, again, a guy like Malik Renew, right? He's here. If he stays here for 4 years, we're going to develop that relationship, that bond, like we have with Trey, like we had with Trace. I don't think that's going to go away. And NIL being there may actually help it happen a little bit more for schools like Indiana, where you can actually keep players. But it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. I'm kind of curious to see how it shakes out just in my own internal feelings as this goes through, because I'll always care and root for Indiana basketball. But is it a little bit different if there's just a lot, you know, like Umar Ballo, he's coming in here, he's going to be fun to watch, but it's watching his last year is not going to be like watching Trace's last year. You know, there was something so much more rewarding about that. And so I think you have to put that in perspective. Umar Ballo is here to help us win basketball games. We want to get to know him as much as we can, but that'll only go so far. And so, you know, the days of, you know, my favorite basketball team of all time, the 1993 Indiana Hoosiers, where you had so many of those guys who were seniors. They'd been there for 4 years. I'd seen all their games. Like, you just, I don't know if you'll ever get rosters like that, where it's that deep with experienced guys who have been there and can still be that successful. That's what we need to see shake out, because you listen to Purdue fans talk, and they obviously are very, very proud of the way that Matt Painter is running their program. Let's see how that works when you don't have the cheat code inside. I mean, I appreciate the way that they run the program too, but they may not have as much success without Zach Edey around. to basically help cover up any other deficiency that you're going to have. And so trying to recruit and develop and not use the portal as much as they have, we'll see. It's still kind of early, I guess, is my point. But I am very interested to see how the relationship between fans and college athletes changes with this much money being paid, some of the money coming directly out of fans' pockets who are contributing to the collectives. It's always kind of felt like college fans gave their players a little bit more benefit of the doubt. And I always kind of like that, you know, and we've obviously been harsh on coaches. I think we've always given players more benefit of the doubt. How does that change generally now in college sports? I don't know the answer, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
I think like everything new, it's just going to take getting used to, and eventually you'll get used to it. Honestly, I mean, because I remember in the 90s growing up, you know, when guys would leave with 1 year of eligibility left, there are people like, I hate that they can do that. They need to get their education and their degree and all that. Then freshmen started leaving and people were like, oh, I hate that. And now that's normal. And you're still like, yeah, we root for this kid. You get to know his family a little bit. And then when he goes to the pros, he's yours, you know, like an OG Ananobi still feels connected to Indiana. He was only here for 2 years and
he was injured for half of one.
Yeah. And I root for his success constantly.
It's interesting. Those two-year guys, what's the difference between two and one? That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, I'm a big fan of OG, but Schifino I loved, and I sang the song when he won, but I don't feel as connected because he was here for a year.
But it's,
Gordon,
it's twice as long.
Excellent. I know.
And you know what? Here's the other thing. Let me say this. This is the other thing, is that when those guys are on campus for 2 years, you get a full off-season of stories about them. Right. Whereas they get on campus in the fall, you hear basically nothing about them. Once they get on campus, you learn a little bit about their personality. Then they start playing right away. So you know them as basketball players, but you don't know about them as people. That's that off season is where you hear about their personalities, their classes, their picking their major, like all of that stuff where you get that deeper personal touch. And I think that's what's hard about the portal. But the thing I'll say about the portal is, it's interesting because in football, most guys don't expect to start as freshmen. And so you rarely are getting you are getting freshmen come in and leave. And it's usually when that happens, it's they were kind of sold a bill of goods or they were surpassed on the depth chart by another freshman they didn't expect to get beat out by. And they go look for something else. And it's not a money hunting thing. It is I need to find playing time. I need to find a fit or a clear path to playing time thing. But for the most part, freshmen realize unless you are in the top 30 guys, you are not going to have an impact on the game in your first year to a tremendous degree. You might at the end of the season make some plays, whatever, but you're not going to have an impact. So those guys stick around until their sophomore year when they're supposed
to. Unless they're at Indiana and then they transfer to Oklahoma.
Right. Happens. But no, and so for football, it's a little bit different. You mentioned, Coach, that for baseball, happens all the time, and it's been happening all the time for a long time. That's just a normal thing. And the reason why is people don't know this, but a lot of baseball players aren't on scholarship. They because teams that have football programs, you are limited in the number of scholarships you can have. And some teams that have football programs reduce the scholarships on the baseball team. And so you have some guys split scholarships. They have different ways of doing it, but it's not a full scholarship roster all the time. I don't know what it's like at Indiana, but out here, that's a problem for some schools, is they lose guys to the teams that have full scholarship, that don't have football programs. But with basketball, I do think it's interesting because you have a twofold thing. You have good players entering their name in the draft and the transfer portal and basically finding the best situation for them. As we said, mid-majors are going to be feeder schools now. That's what's going to be. And the other thing I think we're going to see, and I've mentioned this before, is we're going to start seeing guys who are on the lower end of the top 100 or maybe like the 100th ranked player to the 150th ranked player, instead of committing to a major school where a transfer could come in and play in front of them, you're going to see them start to take the path of go be the best player on a mid-major, up your profile, and then transfer from there to the school you want to go to, as opposed to I'm going to come in and be a bench guy at Indiana, let's say, not get a ton of playing time. They're going to try and get a guy who's a 3-year player who can impact their tournament run right away. and I won't get a whole lot of playing time. Some kids will still do that. There will always be guys that are willing to do that. But you're going to start to see guys that are like low-level 4 stars, high-level 3 stars, picking Ball State, picking Miami of Ohio, picking those other schools.
And you know what will be interesting?
Featured as the top guy.
Is do you start to see some of the high major schools develop relationships with the smaller schools? What if Ball State became Indiana's feeder school?
Yep.
You know, and you send guys there, they come up to Indiana. Is there anything to prevent Indiana's NIL collective from kicking that player $50,000 if they go to Ball State?
I think a gray shirt at Ball State. I think if you're associated with one school, you can't do that. But I don't. There could be some back underground things where you just transfer money.
Is the NCAA going to enforce it, Ryan?
That's the other thing.
There's no enforcement.
That's the other thing here is for so long, everybody was terrified of pissing off the NCAA. It's the reason why Reggie Bush gave back his Heisman Trophy. Nobody was forcing him to do that. He just said, all right, I'm giving it back. Because the NCAA, he was worried about the NCAA and how they're going to hit USC and all of that stuff. Now nobody cares. And everybody who fights the NCAA seemingly wins. Because people are saying, like, well, what gives the NCAA the right to enforce anything at a state university or anything like that? So some kind of governing is going to have to be done here. Because this can't last forever. It can't. Coaches hate it. The administrators hate it. Some players at schools hate it because their path to playing time is now being blocked by a guy being brought in from the outside.
Do we hate it? Do we like it? And the thing is, I just think we have to understand that there's going to be inconsistent results from year to year.
Yes, that's the other thing.
You don't have that foundation of a team and add one or two players. It'll be interesting to see those programs that try to still do that, add a piece here and there versus
UConn this year.
Constantly going to get 6 to 10 players a year. The fear for me as a fan is Kentucky.
That's what I was going to say.
When have they really won a lot of games? They've won games. They've been a seed in a tournament, but you've always heard they haven't meshed, or they've had too many players at one time.
One championship.
That's why Calipari's gone. You mentioned it at one point tonight, the number of replacements that we're going to have. Goody, Balo, Hatton, if Renew and Bacco goes. I mean, we're looking again at 6 or 7. And that's the question I had.
Guys who are leaving. Yeah.
Who are going to probably leave next year. We're in this situation again. It's good because we got NIL. But I'm just saying, as a fan, it used to be you could – I'm never going to look at a scholarship report on Inside the Hall ever again. Like, how many seniors, juniors? It doesn't matter anymore. Those are the things that I have to relearn as an old guy – watching the new college basketball. And that was my premise of the email.
One last thing, and I think that a great part for fans was, even in seasons that aren't the best, if your younger guys tend to be your bench players, at least in the past, and seeing them have big games gave you hope for the future. Because you're like, well, look, you know, when they were sophomores, Galloway and Leo play really well together. Imagine in 2 years what that's going to look like. And like, you can kind of dream on it and you connect to those players. You're like, they're going to be here. And now you can't really do that. I mean, you can't because they can, you know, if they're bench guys and that's what they're assigned to be, well, they're going to go find a place where they can start
Even in my evaluation of what's happened in the portal is fantastic. I think it really is good for what Coach Woodson likes to do. And there is a level of excitement of the talent collection.
Of course.
I'm not as excited. And I keep saying, just wait till you see the Candy Stripes November 9th or 8th or whatever run out and the band's in playing the popcorn smell. And then I'll be back into it simply because of all of this has just changed so fast, and it's reality, and it's not going away. And I need to readjust how I fan.
So that I
don't go bonkers, right? It's just crazy.
I think it's easier to get used to it in football because the players, however wrong this is, are largely faceless.
Right.
You know, other than the quarterback, how many guys do you know what they look like? It's very few. It's a handful, maybe the captains. But for the most part, you don't, you know,
baseball similar.
Yeah, I mean, they got helmets on. You know the pitch. You know your best pitcher. You know, but basketball, it's all about personality and how they look. You know, you identify with them immediately.
So USC is about to lose a top football recruit to Indiana, and Ryan's downplaying
football. Oh, no, he's a quarterback. Come on. Just no, I actually addressed that early on.
Here's the last thing I'll say, too, that is different is the decreased emphasis on high school recruiting changes this, too, because a lot of times you have a two-year relationship with a guy the minute he steps on campus. I mean,
or
think
you
about
don't.
Well, no, but I mean, you know about this player, you've watched them, you've tracked them. Like, think about a Braylon Mullins, right? A guy that we've been talking about for a year, year and a half. I mean, you know, Jalen Harrelson, Trent Sisley, Malachi Marino, all these guys that Indiana's looking at. Like, when they come, there's some built-in equity there with fans already. And you don't get that with, you know, Kanan Carlisle, for example, who, hey, you start hearing about him a few weeks before he takes his visit, he commits. And so it's not bad on him. It's just different. You know, it's like with anything, you know, just the more time that you spend with somebody, reading about somebody, watching somebody, you know, we all in this new online world have these parasocial relationships with people that we don't know. You know, people do that with podcasters. We do it with athletes. And that's just going to change. It's just going to be different. You know, we had 5.5, 6 years with Trace Jackson Davis as an integral part of the Indiana basketball
Race
discussion.
Thompson.
From, right, all those guys. And there's something deeper and really meaningful there. And so I think that'll happen a little bit less. But I do think it'll still happen at schools like Indiana because, again, I do think where you are in the pecking order matters. And so, you know, Indiana, I think, will be able to keep more of their top players, and that's a good thing. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm kind of like you, Coach. You know, objectively, you look at it on paper, and it's like, this is a better team. We are going to have a better basketball season.
No doubt.
But I don't know if there's something missing from kind of the visceral off-season feeling, but I think it'll come in November and December once the games start. You know, it's just a little bit different now, kind of trying to process it all. And I can't exactly put my finger on it, but it's just the upheaval happens so fast, you know, and it's just a lot to process, and maybe it's harder for, you know, us older folks. You know, I think this trend has been going in the NBA a little bit more for a while with younger NBA fans who care more about players than they do teams. And you may start to see some of that. You know, if someone is a Hunter Dickinson fan, I don't know why you would be, but if someone is a Hunter Dickinson fan, you know, are they following him from Michigan to Kansas? You know, in college, the affinities are more strongly tied to the school because that's where the connection is. And so I think you'll see less of that, but it'll be interesting to see how younger generations process that. And that's something interesting to watch from a university perspective, because part of the big value for colleges and universities of sports is that connection that people get with the place that they went to school. And if that starts being more tied to players because of the movement, is a little bit of that lost. None of these questions have answers yet. We just have to watch and see how it all plays out. But I'm definitely excited that Indiana is in a good position to take advantage of it, because that will certainly make it easier to adjust to, as opposed to if we were just getting kicked in the teeth by the new system, which, you know, we're still coming off a season where we didn't sniff the NCAA tournament, so let's not spike any footballs yet. But certainly it feels like we're in a better spot. Any final thoughts on this from you gentlemen?
No.
Or should we go and start answering some questions?
Let's go answer some questions.
Let's do it. Okay, coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we are going to dip into the mailbag. We'll discuss how Indiana can incorporate more threes into its offense, what role player from IU's recent past we'd add to this roster, and much more. Stick with us on the Assembly Call.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are.
They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, y'all? It's Devontae Green giving you the green light to watch Assembly Call after every IU game. Just don't listen to their opinions about shot selection. Remember, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, Devontae. Welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Ryan Phillips and the coach, Brian Tonsoni. By the way, I saw the Assembly Ball TBT team tweeted out that they will be announcing a new player tomorrow morning. Who could it be? Maybe Devontae Green. That'd be pretty cool. Could use a little bit of shooting on that squad. So we will see who else gets added to that roster. But for us now, it's time for our mailbag. These questions submitted via our private discussion community on Substack. You can learn more about that at assemblycall.com. We'd love to have you join us in there. And this first question comes from Bob Thompson. He says, technical question, if a team gets an offensive rebound, does that lengthen the already established possession, or does it create a new one for purposes of points per possession? It extends the possession. So the possession only changes based on a made field goal, a turnover, or a defensive rebound. Otherwise, it is still the same possession for purposes of now.
Points it, per the, possession.
The only thing that changes is now the shot clock just resets to 20. If it hits the rim and you get an offensive rebound, you don't get the full shot clock, but it's still the same possession. All right, from James Hansen. Has there ever been anything as dramatic as the change in the roster of the IU team that we will be seeing?
I thought of one real quick.
This next season. All right, which one was yours?
Green's first season.
Well, yes.
Green's first season. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, it's a joke, but that's the obvious.
Yeah, that's the obvious one, and it's different, obviously, because there was a coaching change, and you'll tend to get some of that upheaval with coaching changes.
And you threw everybody off the team.
Yeah. Okay, do you know, if you've looked at the run sheet, did you guys look at the run sheet
for
Indiana's?
I didn't.
Okay, so KenPom has the stat called minutes continuity. It's the percentage of minutes played from the previous season that you're bringing back for the current season. So last year, Indiana's minutes continuity was 28.3%, which is really quite low.
That's incredible.
Do you know, Ryan, do you know what the minutes continuity was for the 2009 team, Tom Crean's first team?
Like 2%?
3.9%.
That's close.
3.9.
I would have said somewhere around like 5. Yeah. But the guys they had back were the only guys back were Tabor and Offeld, weren't they?
Finkelmeyer, right?
Oh, Finkelmeyer. Forgot about Finkelmeyer.
Yeah.
But yep, again,
and then it was all new.
Those guys weren't exactly running up and down the floor for Kelvin Sampson, you know. So
yeah. So yeah, I would say, you know, if you just look at, and again, not going back too far, but just some recent examples, the 2014 team had a minutes continuity of 30.9% because they were replacing Zeller, Oladipo, Watford, Hulls, maybe a couple others who were in there.
Did Remy Abel leave? No, he stayed for that year, didn't he?
No, I think he left before that
year. He left. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, as I said, last year's team, the minutes continuity was just 28.3%. You know, and obviously this year you have Malik Renew back. You have Trey Galloway back, who played a good amount of minutes. Mackenzie Mbako played a good amount of minutes. Yeah. So you have that. Leal ended up playing, I think, 28% of minutes. So Cups, I think Indiana will be higher. Oh, yeah. And then obviously you have Cups. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you'll probably have a minutes continuity somewhere in the 40s, actually.
But it'll be interesting to see how
you have a lot of your guys returning are now going to be kind of bumped down the rotation.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how you want it to be in an ideal world.
You want to be better with
guys
lower.
Who are better. Yeah. So but any other examples come to mind?
It's just also what we were talking about in segment two. As a fan, you're going to have to get used to this because that's not a negative to replace players anymore. I think your best programs are going to have 5, 6, 7 new people every year, which has been unheard of. And recruiting classes were maybe 3 or 4 maximum. But I think you're going to see lower percentage of minutes returning in many programs because of the way the NCAA is now.
We, you know, what's interesting is a team that, that added a lot of talent, but kept their main guys was Duke. And then they all, then they saw like eight guys transfer this year. So it's just, it, yeah, you know, it's almost like a year to year thing. It could be different. It could be completely different. And I, the team that, you know, who's looking good again, UConn. Like, I mean, like with what,
yeah. So UConn, this season, they had a minutes continuity of 42.5%. So they kept studs like Tristan Newton, Donovan Klingon, Caraban, but then they added in Spencer, they added in Castle, you know, and obviously
Klingon
some other
wasn't
guys
even
then.
Like Klingon didn't even, I mean, he played, but Sonogo,
yeah, he was
the
a reserve behind Sonogo. So Purdue this season was at 69.2% in terms of minutes continuity.
Who did they lose?
Who did they lose?
Yeah, like that was significant.
That's Sasha. I mean,
yeah, Stefanovic, or, and that Hunter transferred, right?
Oh,
Eric,
yeah,
Hunter transferred out.
I forgot about that.
And then they brought in obviously Lance Jones. Yeah. So I think you'll see. I don't think you're going to see many teams like that anymore.
No, because it's it felt like they returned the same team. I know some guys left, but
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think that's, you know, for Purdue fans, this was a really special year for them. I just don't think you're going to see many rosters like that. Obviously, it was one of their best seasons in school history. So we'll see. I mean, we all, Matt Painter's a terrific coach. It's not like they're going to crater, but it'll be interesting to see if he can keep that philosophy going. I think the model is closer to UConn,
yeah,
where you probably keep somewhere between 35 to 50% of guys, because maybe you have a couple of young guys who are pretty good and aren't quite ready for the NBA, and then you bring in some studs that fit some very specific archetypes that you're looking to fill. And when you're at UConn's level, you kind of have your pick of the litter in a lot of ways. And I think it's fair for Indiana fans to feel like, hey, as we move forward in this NIL portal world, we should be maybe not, even if we're not right at that level, we should basically be run one rung below where we can really use this to our advantage.
And by the way, Cam, we've talked about Cam Spencer, maybe the greatest single season transfer ever. It got even better because he helped them land Liam McNeely, because that's the role he's sliding right into. So it got even better after the season was over. So
Cam Spencer was just an incredible transfer story all around, because he had a huge impact on Rutgers too.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's, I mean, he's just a great basketball player.
He really is, and he's one of those guys that you absolutely hate him when he's not on your team. You know, like, he's a trash talking, kind of brash, but that dude backs it up on both ends of the floor. And then, yeah, he's the reason they're getting McNeely, in my opinion.
That was my Brad Underwood impression. All right.
Careful, coach is going to fall in love.
All right, Coach, I'm going to let you answer this question from Craig. What change can the coaches install to free up players for more three-point attempts, including the ability to set more and better screens?
Yeah, and Alex's video, question also about what kind of sets would you like to see next season. You can combine that. For those of you who are watching live or can go back and watch on YouTube, I'm going to show a video of UConn running multiple screens for Spencer, and he hits a three. It's just an example of what some people are doing in college basketball to get more threes, or to get Spencer a three if you had a shooter to get a three. If you're listening on audio, we'll try to explain in some way what we're seeing. So I'm going to hit this and see what happens here. Here we go.
Clips of UConn's offense. I'm going to have to mark this video as pornographic.
Yeah, so you could just see player movement happening on the screen. Starts with a stagger for Spencer into a ball screen, and then a basket cut for Spencer, and then another pin screen. He came off three screens and hits a three. And I know that's a lot of information real quick. We'll try to show this again. I don't have the ability to slow it down, but five players are moving, and the defense gets lost. They're playing Illinois, and they're up like 30 already on Illinois.
And if you're watching on YouTube, just note Spencer never stops.
Yes.
I mean, he pauses to shuffle a little and then goes. He never stops.
And we'll play it, I get one more time, then we can just talk about it. Here is just multiple things. You got middle handoff, middle ball screen, which teams like to run if they wanted to slip this screen from the post right here. A UCLA cut. There's many different options. It's just the reason UConn has won two championships in a row is because they have a lot of variety in what they do. And they post up, they post up their bigs. In 2 years, two different bigs. They run some ball screen action, but they move the defense. It's kind of what we've been talking about for a couple years. And I know there's different philosophies out there. Spacing is important. Some people believe in standing spacing, which is an NBA concept. UConn's won two championships, and they believe in spacing by moving the defense and slipping screens. And the interesting thing, Craig and Alex, for your question, was Coach Hurley and their assistant, Bill Murray's son, Coach Murray, they've spent 2 years studying European basketball and foreign basketball and getting concepts that are unfamiliar to a lot of coaches at the college game. And the European game is about free as free-flowing as you can get. Very fundamental
Olympic basketball,
passing.
Really fun to
it's
watch,
awesome. Yeah. And there's a coach who, you know, came to UConn, started to, you know, build, but the pressure was there to get back. And he's looking for a unique way to attack. And in the college game, in Big Ten, all these conferences, coaches are great. And they've got great defensive schemes. And you kind of got to outmaneuver them a little bit, in my opinion. Some people may say, just get better talent and let the better talent beat the defenses. I think you got to do stuff, to answer your question, very similar to the clip that we showed where there was a stagger, a UCLA cut, a cross screen, Denver screen-to-screener action, and a wide-open three for a shooter. I would love to see that. More than anything, though, I want Indiana to win. So whatever they do, just go win. But if you want threes, that's the kind of action that I think is really good for threes.
To your point, Coach, getting more talent, that's going to raise the floor. I mean, you're going to win more games because you have more talent. If you want to be a steamrolling juggernaut like UConn, then you combine excellent talent with a system that maximizes it. Here's my question to you. You talked about, you know, some people believe in kind of the standing stationary spacing, which is more what Indiana uses. And then you've got this for UConn. Is there a reason, and you see that more in the NBA, is there a reason why that kind of philosophy works better in the NBA with NBA level talent as opposed to at the collegiate level, where it seems to me the way that UConn runs offense, you know, Purdue does some of that, obviously. Some of these better offenses really seem to have more of those principles. Is there something between the talent level and ability of the players that makes a big difference?
Absolutely. The NBA players are so talented that they can shoot over people, they can deck it and score, and so what you do is you really stretch the defense. Plus, the 3 second defensive rule is different in college. But what you do is you just try to get one on one in the NBA because you want your guy to beat someone, or then you force the defense to make adjustments and you play against, you know, you play against 4 against 3 because everyone can play. I mean, the Knicks. If you want to see what IU's offense is kind of looks like, look at the Knicks because Coach Woodson was there. Brunson gets 30 to 40 points. It's a point guard, ball screen heavy guy standing in the corner. But DiVincenzo hits, Hart hits shot. I mean, those guys can just raise up and score. They're talented. And you see that with Doncic at Dallas.
Dallas.
He just dribbles, and then they swing it around and someone raises up and hits a three. You know,
isn't it funny, Coach,
I don't
the three
enjoy
guys
that
you mentioned from the Knicks were all from Villanova and played more of that system?
I was just going to say that.
College.
No, look, and all of what Coach is saying is true. The way Indiana's going to get more threes, and here's the other thing. Some guys, you know, catch and shoot's one thing, but catch and shoot in rhythm versus catch and shoot flat-footed are two completely different things. If you're just standing there and the ball comes to you, some guys handle that well, some guys don't. A guy like Spencer, you watch on that clip, he's moving, he swings around, sets his feet, goes, and he's in motion. And the way, in my opinion, that you get better shots is to put people in motion. Indiana doesn't do that. And that's just not Mike Woodson's philosophy. And he's said that openly. They'll run some screens, and then everybody kind of stands where they are and waits for a kick out. And that's his system. And I'm sure with the right players, it could work. But it hasn't really done that so far. And so you look at what UConn did. And the other thing, Coach, you didn't mention, what's interesting about UConn is Danny Hurley not only looked at European basketball, he looked at the spread offense in football as well.
Yes.
And looked at the
yes.
spacing that was created by that. And how can you take some of those concepts and incorporate them into basketball? And he was calling coaches, and the coaches were like, is this guy crazy? What's he thinking? No, he yes. was, he wanted, yes. I mean, yes, the is answer crazy. Is yes. On this point, he had a point, but it's about finding creative ways to space, especially because UConn had such a turnover in their roster. They had to find other ways to win than they did the year before. Klingon is not Sanogo. Sanogo was a back to the basket guy who was going to chew up clock with, you know, stationary dribbles. Klingon was a movement big man, even though he was 7'2".
They ran a lot more post-ups 2 years ago.
Straight post-ups. Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what Sanogo, did he win? I know he was the guy that everybody said was going to win. I don't know if he won the player of the tournament last year, but he was the guy a lot of people thought would, because he was dominating the tournament. But they also had guys who would swing one off screens and then drive, as opposed to Spencer, who was coming off those screens to shoot. And it's just, he was able to think outside the box to make sure it's not square pegs and round holes in your system. And that's what more coaches, not just Mike Woodson, but more coaches should learn from. These players are so multi-talented these days, but they may not all have the same talents. And so when you get a point guard who can't shoot threes, you find a way to use him in a way you didn't your last point guard who shot threes and things like that. You've got to be as flexible as you can, especially in the days of NIL, where everybody's recruiting from every state. You don't know for 3 years, this kid's going to be our point guard. You know,
that he had different formations. He said this, he got different formations, but you're running different actions. And so on the basketball court, he's calling horns and you know, the two ball screens up there, but then they can run five or six
different iterations.
Or someone knows that if their guy jumps out to switch, that's an automatic slip. So he teaches concepts. He has maybe 8 or 9 concepts for every set. He might have 8 sets, but then there's 8 or 9 different versions or variations. And you saw some beautiful slip screens in the NCAA tournament, one in the national championship game, where they are doing what I call a wiper screen. They set a side ball screen, then go across the lane to set a screen for a shooter. And boy, everyone jumps out at the shooter, and then boom, the post would dive and they got a big dunk. And the thing is that there's a variety. There's a time to stand for spacing that is called for. There is time for a post up to get a double team and play out of the double team. And then there's a time to run some really good actions to get a slip for an easy basket or to get some other things. And the teams that manufacture that variety the best, they're the ones that are playing in Final Fours. The ones that don't get beat earlier in the tournament or don't make the tournament. And it's a variety of offenses, and it could be game to game. You could be heavy post ups against one team and then have to come run some staggers against another team. Coaches that win, I believe, do that kind of thing more than just one or two things in the game of basketball at the collegiate level.
You're 100% right. And here's the other thing I'll add to it. You can run sets and run all these different things. As the ball goes inside and outside, as the point guard dribbles and uses a screen, as guys cut, all while you're doing this, there are many different shot opportunities presented. And so this is where shot selection and shots that are valued and devalued in your program really make a big difference. We've talked a lot about long twos. It's the most inefficient shot in the game. Good offenses typically don't shoot a high percentage of them. Indiana has been above 15% of their shots are long twos, I think, every season that Mike Woodson has been here. Other programs don't do it. It's not a shot that is devalued at Indiana as much as I would think, you know, that it should be. You know, when you get open looks from 3-point range, you need to be ready and willing to take them. You know, we've seen Indiana players at times, whether it's coached or not, really defer to getting it back inside. You know, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with playing inside out basketball. Most good offenses try to get it inside first, either off the bounce or off a post up. But then once that ball goes back outside, be ready to take that opportunity. If it's a good look, even if there's still 25 seconds left in the shot clock. And Indiana, it feels like too often, is just committed to get it on the block. And that's where I think you get some of those frustrating possessions where it's like, you know, we're doing all this work and we're ending up with, you know, a marginally efficient shot where we passed up 2 or 3 that the math tells us is better. And I get context matters. So, you know, where's the defender? How in rhythm are you? Like, you can't just look at the analytics to tell you every individual shot, is it good or not? But there are macro trends that are important. And the way that Indiana has, Indiana's shot selection in 3 years under Mike Woodson just hasn't been conducive to smart basketball.
And it's not that of a great program.
Right.
I mean,
and that's just, you know, when you analyze what the other programs do. And so that's the other missing piece of it, coach, is as you run through those, you've got to know what are the shots that you're looking for, what are the ones that you don't want to take. And at some point, there probably needs to be consequences if you're taking too many of the ones that aren't good. And that's dependent on the player and the situation, all that stuff. But that's the other missing piece that needs to go in there that hopefully we see some change on from Indiana this season. And, you know, only time will tell until we get out on the court. All right, Ryan, I know you can do one more. So let me go to one that will be fun to have you answer from Alex. If you could take one bench or role player from recent teams and put them on this coming season's team to fill out the roster, who would you pick and why?
Recent, how recent are we talking? Like last, since we've been doing the show?
Since we've been doing the show. Let's use that, those parameters.
Bench or role player?
Yeah, so basically you need to fill in the Indiana's roster right now with a bench or role player. I think I have one. It may be a controversial choice. Coach, if you have one. You can't just say like Oladipo or something like that. Like he probably needs to be a guy who
that's not a role player.
Yeah, it needs to be a guy who's going to play the role that you're asking him to play. Also,
oh man,
I is it off the bench because you miss a Race Thompson kind of guy, the glue guy defender.
Race would be a good one.
That type of player, maybe not the starter Race, but a guy similar to that, backing up this year's post players.
Because I was thinking about a shooter, but there's so many guards and wings that
I was too. I was thinking Zizlov.
I'll tell you who mine is.
Let me think. I'm not going to say like Bielfeldt because he was too important to that team.
You don't remove him from the previous team that he was.
But I'm saying like he was more than a role player. He was like,
he was sixth man of the year. So he was a little too high up in the rotation.
Yes. Yeah. He started some on that team, didn't he? Maybe he didn't, but he played a significant role. I would say, I think Race is a good one. I'm glad you brought that up, coach. I think that would be a good one because you need that backup big right now who can play defense and rebound, which you don't really have on the roster. I think that fitting this one, that fits.
Yeah, I mean, Race is, he would almost be overqualified for the role.
Right. Like, that's
why the guy that I was going to say, the guy that I was going to say is Deron Davis. I actually think he'd be a
perfect
fit.
That would work. Yeah.
There you go.
Because Deron was always better in limited action just because of the conditioning and injury issues. You can run your post offense with him. He became a really good post passer. And I think, you know, when he was healthy, was an underrated defender. He had good shot blocking instincts. Not a great rebounder, but good enough. Again, probably overqualified for the role, but he's the guy that I think would be, and I know he's not able to step out and shoot, and that's why everybody's excited about Hatton. I think the bigger priority with this backup big is how well can that guy defend and rebound.
I completely.
I don't think you're really going to need the offense that much. So that's who I would take.
And how can you just? I mean, we don't need him because we got nine wings right now. But Sheehy, like the ultimate guy you'd want on every team, just to flex at Purdue. I mean, he's that glue guy, right?
Well, we've got Galloway though.
No, I know. On this year's squad, you couldn't pick Sheehy because we just have too much.
Yeah. But yes, you know, for a role player, yes.
But for a role player on in any other year, you'd say that was a guy who really filled that, at least in his first 3 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think Deron's a good call. I mean, those are the post guys I can think of. I mean, Thomas Bryant was too good. Evan Fitzner. He was
great. I mean, you know, because Durr was the first person who came to mind.
Yeah,
but Deron Davis is a much better version of Durr.
Yes.
So if Alex would allow me to put Davis, who obviously started and had a more prominent role, but I think this would be the perfect role for Deron Davis on a really good team. Because Deron, unfortunately, was never on really good teams, but he could really fit in this one. Last question from Ethan. What are you each doing the day after IU wins its sixth banner?
Not a whole lot because I will be so hungover.
Recovering, not much. Sleeping, recovering.
Yeah. We'll probably do a podcast. We'll probably none of us will have showered and we'll be doing a podcast, I would imagine. It just, but.
All right. So when Indiana makes the Final Four, And it will happen again in our lifetimes, assuming we're still doing the show.
In your guys' lifetime, I got a little less time.
Do we go to the Final Four and championship game and watch it in person, or do we stay here at home so that we can do the show as normal right afterwards?
No, I think we set up a room. We get hotel rooms, and we get one hotel room that we just set up as a studio and broadcast.
And then we run back there afterwards on a little bit of a delay.
Yep. People will accept the delay because they'll want to watch the net cutting and all that stuff.
Oh, that's true. I've always, there's a certain part of me that feels like we've kind of been doing this in the same way for that moment. I would want to be there in the same way that we always have been, but you're right. We would have some time to,
we could rent a corner of a bar or something, and get it brought, just go straight to a setup somewhere. I mean, we have enough pull now, don't we, to do something like that? I'm assuming it's going to be in Indianapolis when it happens. Cause it has to.
Hope so. It should be. They should just do the Final Four there every year.
But no, we'll do some work and we'll figure something out. But I think we have to do a show after, and I think we also have to be there. Even if we don't go to the game, we have to be
there. Yeah, we got to be there for the scene.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. For sure.
So,
or do a remote from the fountain, when we win.
Coach, you can be our on-scene reporter from the fountain.
There you go.
just to relive the day.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, Ryan, get out of here, Coach. We'll answer one or two more.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Have a great week.
Thanks,
everybody.
Ryan.
See you, Ryan.
See you, man. Okay, a couple more here. Let's knock these out. Okay, Philip says, can you explain when the players return and can start practice? How many hours are coaches allowed to instruct players during the summer, or is it mainly just weightlifting and conditioning? So, Coach, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is correct. In the off season, they have 8 hours per week that they can work, 5 days max. So they have to have at least 2 days off. And up to two of those hours can be skill instruction. And during the summer, you can have no more than four players on the court at one time. So like they couldn't, bring in all the new guys and work on installing defense, but you could have four guys in at one time to do skill work. Then you have up to 8 hours. And I think, I wasn't able to verify this, but I think like weight training and official weight training and conditioning that is originated from the coaches, I think that counts on those 8 hours. Now, if Trey Galloway says, hey, I want to come talk to you, Coach Woodson, that doesn't count in the 8 hours. He can go play a call whenever he wants to, go get a lift in whenever he wants to. But if it's, I think Cliff Marshall saying be here at 7 for our workout, that counts as part of that 8 hours during the off season. And then during the season, it's 20 hours per week, a max of 4 hours per day. And same thing, anything initiated by the athlete doesn't count. And I think actual games count for three of those hours if you have a game. So that was what my research told me. If anybody knows differently, let me know. But I'm pretty sure that's
here's the thing. And this is anti old man, get off my lawn stuff. These guys are making money. Get rid of these restrictions. Let them work on their craft. We're paying someone hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why do we need to limit them? And again, if we get to employee status, which is really the way that needs to go, revenue sharing, contracts, union. I heard someone on a podcast say, why would the players want to unionize now? Because it's just free reign, right? Why do they want to give up?
Yeah.
The players have complete control. You can't have me in for 20 hours, but you can pay me $400,000 or whatever else.
Pretty good.
That's
pretty good.
But get rid of these. And then I wonder too, is there any need, again, I'm not saying I like this, but is there any need for them to go to school anymore? I mean, if they're employees and working, then let them go play basketball and win championships for their schools, wherever that may be.
They're going to have to figure out what the relationship is with the university.
You're right.
Because it's still a college, it's still a university. That part does feel like an integral part of it. But as you said, all these things that we thought were integral parts of college athletics are just being smashed with a sledgehammer at this point.
And there's no enforcement. Are you really going to you know, some guy leaves in January. I mean, the APR graduation rate, you haven't heard any of that lately with guys leaving. And I mean, if it's the Wild Wild West, let it be the Wild Wild West, because I'd like our chances, to be honest. Once I get used to it as a fan, I kind of like our chances, you know. So let's get better. I mean, we need better defense. And we need better offense. And we got 13 guys that are all meshing together. Get in the gym and learn that nail slot rim and just play the hell out of it.
40 hours a week, baby. Let's learn that.
I mean, if I want the Indiana jersey to win, let's get rid of these things. They're not student athletes.
Coach is going from one extreme to the other.
Absolutely.
Don't go to class. Your class is nail slot rim. Let's go.
That's exactly right. Get in there and learn it. You're getting paid basketball.
Okay, a couple more. Why does men's college basketball use two halves instead of four quarters? Seems everyone else does it. So I went and looked at the history of this. So in 1905, James Naismith invented basketball, what, like 1891, something like that. In 1905, and originally it was two 15-minute halves. They adjusted to have two 20-minute halves. That went all the way until 1951, when they changed to 10-minute quarters for both the NBA and the NCAA. In 1954, the NCAA went back to halves, while the NBA stuck with the four quarters and added two more minutes because they have 12-minute quarters. And then in June 2015, the women changed it to quarters. So yes, men's college basketball is the only basketball league that we know of that does two 20-minute halves. High school is in quarters. Women's college basketball is in quarters. NBA is in quarters. Overseas, FIBA. It's in quarters.
All right.
FIBA. You know, again, there's something I've always liked about the two 20-minute halves just because I like college basketball. But then you watch women's college basketball games, and it's like, oh, yeah, I feel like this kind of flows better. So I would be up for changing. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure the reason why they've kept it. It may have something to do with TV, you know, because you get that extra TV timeout in there. So I don't know if TV contracts complicate it. But just from a fan perspective, I think it would be more enjoyable to watch in four quarters.
I imagine it has something to do with the number. We're paying you this amount of money. We expect this amount of timeouts, and it's a little bit harder to squeeze that in to the quarters. I don't know that for a fact, but I would
probably.
It makes no sense otherwise, right, that there's some money to be lost if you go back to the quarters. I'm for the quarters. I'm for the quarters, and I'm for the fouls and the free throws that's in the women's game. I'm not a big fan of the move ahead timeout, but I do think those changes are needed.
Last question from Troy. Is it time for there to be some sort of summer league for college basketball? Nearly every team these days is turning over a large amount of their rosters each spring, so they could be used to figure some things out before the games count. 100%, I would love summer basketball. I think John Calipari, I think, was the first one who proposed this, and I think it makes a ton of sense. And I think I would think it would be the kind of thing that your team could opt into. Some seasons, maybe you wouldn't want to do it because you've got a really experienced roster, or maybe you've got some injuries, or there's just some reasons. But, you know, imagine with the new pieces Indiana has right now to be able to get some extra practice time and play three or four games could be really, really valuable. Not to mention, again, I mean, all of the, you know, marketing and television opportunities that would be there to make money from it. I mean, we would do post-game shows. We'd be watching it. And I think it could be really fun. So I would be all for something like that in the offseason. I think it could benefit the teams, and I think it would be good for fans.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to do it to where you play. Like the NBA Summer League, you know, I know they're all rookies and free agents, so it's not like you're playing and learning the system there. You would think some coaches don't want to see scouting and all that kind of stuff. You know, they don't want that out there, kind of like the hidden scrimmage. They like those things. But, you know, there's ways. You have 13 scholarship players. You could get a lot of runtime for 13, and you have your scholar. You could get your walk-ons to play as well in the fourth quarter or whatever. You know, you wouldn't necessarily need to win the summer league, but three or four games in the summer, you could do it locally. You could travel or play, you know, a bunch of local Midwest schools at Hinkle for a week. Like, sign me up for that, right? And you could, you don't have to play the 40-minute game either. You know, you could play 8-minute, 10, you know, 8-minute quarters, whatever, you know, that you wanted, just to get out there and get in the flow and get people, get it on tape. And again, if we are going to the wild, wild west with transfer and money, and we're going to have 10 guys new on a team every year, then you've got to do something to let coaches and players get acclimated to each other, so that when November 9th and the popcorn is smelling in the assembly hall, that they're playing at their best early, especially Indiana. Yep. Indiana hasn't played their best in the non-conference. You know, so if this is what we're about, you know, don't just make it about money. Make it about winning for your schools. It makes absolutely – it's the same thing, Jared. I fought this my whole high school career. You can only have two guys in the gym at a time. Like, these young people need coaches and need adults, need weight trainers, need Cliff Marshall in their life. Mm-hmm. Are there coaches that will abuse it and overwork players? Yes. But then you punish 80% of the people who have the right mind for these athletes, and even if they're played professionals, then do something about the 20 that go 80 hours a week or whatever, right?
Or just increase the cap a little bit. Yeah, but that's equalized now because of the transfer portal is the great equalizer. If a coach is doing that, those absolutely guys will transfer out somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I'm with
absolutely
you. I'm with you. Those rules,
it just drives me crazy as
system.
a coach, even in high school, that I didn't have access to all my players as much as I wanted to. And you always heard, well, you'd play 80 games in the summer, and then you would do – well, yeah, some coaches would, but – and we don't have the transfer into high school, so I can see that being a little bit more of an issue. But come on, you know, teams – you know, and anyone out there who's listening, you want to be with your teammates. You know, you want to go work on your game if you're any kind of athlete. And the memories of being with your team and a teammate – are vital. And so many times people try to legislate stuff, you know, to protect or save or whatever. Go after the people who abuse the system, and let people who have the right intentions of improving someone's skills and ability and becoming men, let them have access to them without these silly rules, which can't be enforced anyway.
And again, those rules were from an antiquated time when coaches had a lot more control. They don't now. So let the natural consequences handle that. If you're treating your players like crap, a lot of them are going to transfer. And if they don't, then maybe they like if you're working them 60 hours a week or whatever it is. You know, the players have choice now. So I agree. I don't think they need to be protected by rules like that. All right, Coach. That is our last question. We will move on. That's going to do it for us on this week's edition of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, you can join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. As always, thank you to Bob Thompson for producing our music and for asking a question. Thank you to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos, and thank you for listening. We will be back to talk IU hoops again with you next Thursday night. Until then.
Take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
I think they've gotten enough show.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Here I come, Mrs. Stansoni.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.